brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. Hello, hello, everyone. I'm Jen, and today we have Merma and Karen here. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
And we are going to discuss our book review episode, which is All the Right Places by Jennifer Nevin. I think that's how you say it. We still haven't figured out how to get that name right, but one of these days we will. But first, we're going to talk, as always, about what we've been reading and maybe a little bit about what we've been up to. So, Karen, do you want to start with about what you've been reading?
Sure, because it's very short. Still kind of busy over on my end, hoping that clears up soon, because I actually got a third bookshelf for my room, and so I'm putting all of the books that I want to read and need to read for, like, Hypeable and Book Hype on that and sort of keeping it separate so I can be, like, more focused. So hopefully that works.
Very fun.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited.
Yeah, but I'll be sending you a box of books, by the way, that you can add to that, so you'll be all set.
Yeah, I'm like punching the air right now.
That is not going to work, just FYI.
What's not going to work?
I have a separate bookshelf. I'll send you a photo of it. It's a disaster zone in my apartment.
Okay, I want you guys to understand there are steps that lead down to one of the rooms, and, like, literally there's a ledge by the steps. And for the entire wall are the stacks of books that I have to read.
Oh, God.
I'm not even kidding. I can also take a picture. It's frightening.
Every surface in my apartment is, like, covered in books. But I did at one point, when I moved, actually, I bought a bookshelf. And I was like, okay, this is going to be, like, my Hypeable, like, review, whatever, you know, shelf. And it started off really well. And then just it did not go so well. I think after I'd been overseas a couple of times and came back to large piles of things.
Yeah.
And, now it's just, like, at the point where it's too overwhelming to, like, attempt to fix it, so I just keep adding things to it, and one day it's going to collapse.
Mine is also very full, hence the reason they're stacked up along the stairwell. It's a good time,
but good luck, Karen. That sounds like a really great idea. I'm sure it will work for you.
Thanks so much, guys. That's not very helpful, but anyway, all I ended up reading was, other than All the Bright Places, a comic book, Wonder Woman Volume 2, Guts, and it was really good, and I'm super into Wonder Woman, and it has a lot of Greek mythology in it, which is really fun for me, so highly recommend that.
Awesome. All right, Marima, what have you been reading?
I have read Us by David Nichols, which was very good. He's the author of the One Day, book that everyone, like, went crazy over a couple of days.
Yes.
And it was that movie where Anne Hathaway has a terrible accent.
Yes.
Yeah. So I liked it. I have to say, like, I didn't love One Day, and I sometimes feel like I'm the only person in the world who didn't, but I really liked this because it's about a guy who, his kid is about to go off to college, and his wife decides that's a good time to leave him. And so it's, like, focusing on these two relationships. There's a romantic relationship with his wife. That's not a spoiler. That's on the blurb. There's a romantic relationship with his wife, and then there's, like, a sort of somewhat fraught relationship that he has with his son. And I found the relationship with the son to be more interesting than the one with the wife. But it is a really good book, and it's written, like, in a very interesting way. And it was long-listed for the Man Booker Prize, but, you know, so are, like, hundreds of books. So I don't know if that's, like, what you're into. It's not YA, technically. But there is this really – oh, this is so cool. There's this really interesting bit at the end where – so the whole thing's told from this guy's perspective, and, you know, he's, like, in his late 50s type thing. There's this chapter at the end where – the author switches it as if, like, if this story had been told from the wife's perspective, like, what would it have sounded like? And if this story was told from the kid's perspective, what would it have sounded like? And it's funny because the kid's perspective was, like, a lot of YA books that I've read. I was like, oh, yeah, like, I see it. But, yeah, I thought it was interesting that he chose to go with the with the dad. And then obviously All the Bright Places. I did a reread of that because I had read that last year. And then lots of boring school books that no one cares to hear about.
Awesome. Yeah, I have not read any books, which I know is weird. I mean, I finished Zodiac, but that was over almost 2 weeks ago because I've also been doing a lot of schoolwork. I've been reading a lot of journal articles, which are not very exciting because I have two papers due on Monday. So not very exciting at all. Hopefully, though, next week I'll get back in touch with my reading side and get to read something for fun. We shall see. All right, so moving along to Book Bites this week, we had a tweet from Stephanie, it looks like, at Steph Beauray, and she wants to know what, I know it's way past the holidays, but I wanted to know what y'all thought of At Naturally Steph's story in My True Love Gave to Me. It's her short story anthology she did for the holidays. So I read the whole anthology and I really liked it. I love a lot of the authors in that anthology. So it was a no-brainer when I picked it up and read it because I know I like their writing and their style. And there were some really interesting ones in there that were pretty whimsical and funny. So as a whole, I liked the entire book. What about you guys? Did you guys read it?
Yeah, I read it. I really liked it. I feel like I can't remember each of the individual stories now because I read it so long ago. I did really like Steph Perkins' one though, and Rainbow Rowell's Midnights. I think that was probably my favorite out of all of them. Some were better than others, you know, like as happens in these. But overall, like it was a pretty solid anthology, and I liked how it wasn't all contemporary YA romance. Like there's some fantasy in there and some different things, so that was nice. It was very, very solid, and obviously like we love Steph Perkins, so hers was one of the standouts for me.
Very true. Karen, did you read it?
I did not.
Okay. Are there any?
You should read it, Karen.
You should, first of all. Even though it's past Christmas, it doesn't matter. You can. It's still winter. We're still getting snow. You can still read it.
That's true.
Although I have to say, like, at one point I was reading it and I was like, oh, I'm kind of over this romance thing. And then I was like, oh, that's the point of this book. I should probably just deal with that.
Yeah. It's like, called My True Love Gave to Me.
Everyone keeps getting together in these stories. Like, guys, it's so repetitive. And then I was like, oh, no, that's the theme. Okay. Just had to remind myself.
It happens. It happens. All right, so as you guys know, today our book's discussion is going to be about All the Bright Places by Jennifer Nevin. And before we move any further, of course, we want to let you guys know that this is available as an audiobook. And it is, I think, when we get into the discussion, we'll find out, we all pretty much really like the book, which is kind of a rare occurrence. But as always, you can get it as a free audiobook from Audible, which is a fantastic service. If you go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype, that's audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. So now on to our discussion of All the Bright Places. So let's first start off with buy or borrow. Go ahead, Marma, you can go first.
Yeah, definitely buy it. I read this last year. I think I regaled you guys with the story of the saga of the post-it notes, but I reread it again this year, and I have to say I didn't find it as impactful the second time I read it, but still really good at the same time. So yeah, definitely buy.
Okay, Karen?
I've been thinking about this ever since I finished the book, and I don't think I necessarily have a rating for it, buy or borrow, because I feel like some people probably should steer clear of a book like this. There are a lot of triggers in it, and it's very realistic and very tough to read if you've been through some of this stuff or you know people who have. And so I feel like some people probably shouldn't pick it up, but others probably should if they want to understand what having, you know, a mental disorder is like from the point of view of, you know, these characters that do. So while I still really liked the book, I think it's, for me at least, it's going to be like on a very individual basis whether somebody should pick up this book and read it or not.
That is definitely a fair assessment. For me, it's a buy. I think it's an incredibly well-written book, given the topics that it's discussing, because so frequently you get a book that discusses, you know, mental health issues and stuff like that, and it's not accurate, or it's so far over the top to get its point across that it doesn't really resonate well. This particular book, I feel, does a really, really solid job of showing you exactly what this stuff looks like. You know, and I work with students who are like this. So for me, reading this book, it was a little jarring in the sense in that she got it so right in a lot of ways. And I didn't feel like I wanted to throw the book because it was annoying me that they were just playing things up or something. Like, I think it was well done. There were a couple of things that annoyed me, and it's mostly with the adults in the book, more so than anything else. So yeah. But other than that, I think the book is really well written. And I understand your viewpoint, Karen, about, you know, it's definitely a vibe with kind of like a beware of what you're reading, because, you know, some people wouldn't be able to handle the book and other people's will. So I get it.
Yeah, it's a buy with like a huge trigger warning on it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, that hasn't been hidden in the marketing of the book, you know? So yeah, like, I would say buy it, obviously with the caveat that, like, if you think this is going to be something that is not good for you or triggering for you, then obviously, like, don't pick it up. But I mean, that kind of goes with, like, we've talked about books that deal with these kinds of issues before, and maybe not as explicitly, but I'm sure there are some people that would find those challenging as well. So
Right. Yeah,
obviously, like, something to keep in mind.
Exactly. All right, so we might as well just hop right into it now. So the plot line is basically about these two characters. One is Theodore Finch and the other is Violet Markey. Finch is your typical kind of outcast. He gets picked on. He has some wild, erratic behavior in some sense, because he kind of just doesn't care what other people think in a lot of ways. But then at the same time, he does care. It's one of those conflicting things that you find in high school, I think. Violet is your typical popular girl who's had a tragedy in her life. Her sister was killed in a car accident. She was in the car with her sister. She lived. Her sister didn't. It's been about 8 months, I think, since her sister died, and Violet still struggles. She won't get in a car. She won't go anywhere. She rides her bike or walks, even in the dead of winter in Indiana. Because she can't handle it. She also kind of withdraws from everything that used to be part of her life. And then Finch and Violet meet, both standing on the bell tower of their campus. They're both up there for kind of different reasons and yet kind of the same reasons, I guess. And so from there, we kind of learn more about Finch and Violet. The story is told in alternating points of view between the two of them, which I think is really good because it gives you a more full picture of what's going on and what it looks like in a lot of ways. So how did you guys feel about that overarching kind of storyline? Like, we have Finch has bipolar, essentially, is what they come out and say, but it takes a really long time for you to get there as a reader, for someone to actually put a name on it. Like, you have these sets of behaviors that he's demonstrating, but there is no label to it. It's just what he describes as the darkness. And then you have Violet, who kind of has a depression and some guilt going on in there, but, you know, for everything that she's been through. So what did you guys think about those portrayals?
They were, as far as I can tell, very accurate and written in a way that you're really put inside of these characters, especially Finch, because I wasn't sure for quite a long time what exactly it was that he had. And, you know, I kind of had an inkling because you could see a little bit of like that manic behavior and then he would go into depression. And so it made sense, but the way that he described awake and asleep, you know, capital letters, I think was really interesting and a really sort of hard hitting way to get the point across of like what was going on inside of his mind. And then on the flip side of that, you know, Violet, you could see how much the car crash affected her, the way that she wore her sister's glasses and all that kind of thing. And it was a nice juxtaposition because one was, you know, it's a disorder, it's a chemical imbalance, and the other one is very like situational and it has to do with her environment. And it was cool, you know, quote unquote cool, seeing those kind of against each other, I guess.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I like the juxtaposition. I think for me, Finch being bipolar was not surprising to me. Like, that was fairly obvious from the start, but I think that's because of, like, you know, personal experiences in my life. And I think also because of that, I got more frustrated with Violet than I did with Finch because, like, I have personal experiences knowing people with bipolar. I don't have close personal experiences with people who have this kind of survivor's guilt, you know? So that, like, really colors the way that you go through this book. And I would agree that I think the depiction of bipolar in particular was incredibly realistic. And when they mailed me this book, actually it came with a letter from the author, which they do sometimes. And, you know, I generally don't read them, which maybe is a bad thing, but, you know, like, well, you get a lot of, oh, this book is like the new thing. You've never seen anything like this. And like, it's a lot of hype usually. But because this book, I had been hearing a lot about it. I kind of looked through the letter and it was saying about how the author, it was inspired by the author. She was like in love with this boy when she was younger and he had bipolar and, you know, she was really drawing on that experience, obviously. And I think that showed, you know, it wasn't like demonizing either of them by any means, but at the same time, like, it wasn't shying away from the nastier aspects, I guess, of associated with like both her depression and his bipolar. And, you know, I think like Karen said at the start, it can be a tough thing to read. It's not always a pleasant thing to read about because it's very confronting, but I appreciated that, you know, she really went for it. And yeah, I guess like looking back on it, like I think Karen kind of put her finger right on it. You know, his is like in his brain, you know, it's something in his personality or in, you know, whatever it is. And hers was like situational. So, you know, in hindsight, looking back at it, you're like, okay, well, she's going to be able to like move through this and he maybe not so much. But when you're reading it at the time, I feel like she does a really good job of making them both kind of the situations as perilous as each other. You know what I mean? Like, you don't feel like, oh, well, hers is just, you know, she'll get over it. Like, you really feel for both of them, which was, yeah, sad, but good in a way. I don't know. I feel bad saying that, but
no, you
know
what I mean. No, I think it's a well-rounded story. You don't feel like one's, it's not lopsided in any way. Both of their struggles are very real, even though they're very different. I mean,
yeah.
Finch's struggle is something that he needed help with. He needed an adult intervention. He probably needed medication. Those are all the things that he needed. And he wasn't getting. So his bipolar was kind of left, you know, untreated. And untreated bipolar is incredibly dangerous. And,
right. And she needed help, too, but she got
right.
it.
Right. She needed help, too, and she got it. And her family life was different.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Like, she had support. Right.
There was
but also, maybe, like you said, he was in more danger if he was by
right.
himself than her.
Right. He was in exceptionally more danger. I mean, he would live in his closet and no one would notice. And
yeah.
like, as I'm reading this, I'm just like, oh my God, like it's so disturbing and yet so kind of genuinely accurate in a lot of ways that it's scary because again, you know, it's something that I do know because it's of my job and it's scary to read something so real and know that, you know, someone actually got it right. But at the same time, it's just scary to read because I mean, those are people's lives. And so I don't know. I thought it was, like I said, I thought it was exceptionally well done and that they were and very realistic and well balanced, as you said. So I enjoyed the book as much as you can enjoy a book that's this kind of heavy in a sense.
Yeah, I think like I did enjoy it. You know, I don't want to say, I don't think you have to be like, oh, it's very like, it's a serious book. You know, it's a heavy book at times, but it's about these, you know, I don't know how to phrase it. Like it is about bipolar, but it's not at the same time. Like
it's about people.
Finch.
It's
yeah.
about people and what they go through and their lives.
Right.
Their lives are interesting and, you know, they're fascinating people to read about. So.
Right. So I don't want to like shy away from saying that I really did enjoy this book because it was really well written and really beautifully written at times. And
right.
yes, like it was tough to read, but like, I don't know. Reading doesn't have to be like happy, joyful all the time. Like, no. It can make you, you should just feel things, anything, like feel an emotion. That would be right. Great.
And so I'm pretty sure this will bring out a lot of emotions. Yeah. So talking about the writing, as you just brought up, I think the writing was gorgeous. There were so many facets of the writing that I liked. Like, with throughout the book, there are these – Finch has this kind of very morbid sense of humor, in a sense that he's constantly talking about suicide and different ways that people kill themselves and, like, the facts and the stats about it. But it comes up in his natural, like, pattern of thinking and stuff. And I thought it was such an interesting way to kind of – give you more perspective about how his mind was working. And then there are other random facts, and there are quotes from things, you know, like different books. And I'm going to get her name wrong. The poet. Who was the poet?
Sylvia Plath.
Thank you. I'm like Plath, but I wanted to say Emily because then she talked about Emily Bronte. That's what it was. But so there are all these things spread to kind of throughout the story as well. And I loved that addition. I don't know what it was about that, but I really, really loved it.
Yeah, well, A Bell Jar is like the quintessential depression book, so
yes, yes,
I was not surprised that he found himself attracted to that. It was kind of this gallows humor, I guess, in the face of like what he was dealing with. And yeah, I appreciate that because, again, like that's that from my own experiences, like that's very realistic. I guess like he has this preoccupation with death, and so it shows in his conversation and things like that, you know. That makes sense. If you're thinking about something a lot, you tend to bring it up when you're talking. And he obviously like has this fascination, and I don't know, I guess all of the facts about it, maybe I found a little too heavy-handed. Just like I thought there were a couple too many, you know, like I got the point she was trying to make, but I noticed it more the second time I read it, that like there was a lot of them, and I get it, but you know, in editing, maybe I could have done with a couple less of those. But I liked the quotations and, you know, and all of that. Like, I like the way that they sort of connected through
literature and books.
Yeah. Well, kind of, because, you know, they're both like Googling it. So it's right. Like, well, how right. much of a connection is that?
Right. But
that's like so representative of teenagers as well,
exactly.
You know, like trying to be so deep. And I mean, no offense, like we have all been teenagers, but you know, you right. do, someone goes like, oh, what's your favorite book? And you're like, oh, I shouldn't say Harry Potter. I should say like, oh, like To Kill a Mockingbird. That's my favorite book. And then someone goes like, oh, what's your favorite quote? And you're like, oh God. And you have to, you know, Google quick, right. like find something. So yeah, right. that kind of made me laugh a little bit, I have to say, like when I was he was like, oh God, gotta find another one. Like, exactly.
He's like, that was quick. The only thing I knew. But I also like when they went to like the bookmobiles and the bookstore, and they kind of had the moments with Dr. Seuss and quoting it back and forth and kind of running all around, and I really liked that. Even
yeah,
though it's a surefire sign of his mania. I really liked it. I thought it was sweet.
Yeah, and overall I would say the writing is incredibly strong, very like lyrical in a way. Her turn of phrase is fantastic, and I think again it's like that balance, you know, between she doesn't want to make it too morbid because like you're not going to read it, but they're very sort of contemplative and like introspective, I suppose is the right word. Like they're both very introspective, and Finch more so, but that really shows in his chapters, and
right.
yeah, really just really beautifully written, like very very kind of mournful and sorrowful at times, but like then interjected with the humor so that doesn't become too much.
Yeah, it doesn't become heavy. So Karen, what did you think? You've been kind of quiet.
Well, I was just thinking about you know, the stuff with all of the literature and even them slowly becoming friends. In this case, like, I think I connected to Finch a lot more. I think that he was a very deep and introspective character, and so that's probably why I felt for him a bit more. But in, you know, Violet, I liked that she was supposedly this popular girl, she had all these popular friends, and yet throughout the course of the book she sort of, I don't know, took her own life back into her hands and decided that she was going to hang out with Finch because she liked him and it didn't really matter what anybody said. And she saw in her friends a lot of really deep-seated issues that she didn't want to be involved in, you know, picking on people, especially Finch and that sort of thing. And so, yeah, I was just thinking about the way that she evolved over the course of the book and how much I really appreciated that, considering that she was, you know, one of the popular girls.
Yeah, that's true. She did evolve in a really good way. The only thing I have with Violet is there are a couple moments where it almost feels like it's the love saved her and brought her back around kind of thing. And that kind of got me a little bit. I was like, why can't they just be friends? Why do they have to be together? I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
You want to have some sweet elements too. But at the same time, I was like, if they could just maintain this amazing friendship that they've started, that would be enough. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I get it, but at the same time, it would have been enough as friends, so.
Yeah, I think for me, that's definitely, like, the most problematic element of this book was not, like, the way she depicted bipolar or depression or any of these things, but, like, yeah, that notion that Violet needed Finch to save her, like, needed the love of someone to save her. But, you know, I think it was kind of borderline for me, like, I feel like Niven, like, does a very good job of showing, well, yes, it's Finch, but it's also, like, the support of her parents. It's also these new friends that she makes. It's also her finding, like, a sense of direction in her life that doesn't have anything to do with him, you know, like, with the magazine and all of that. And I understand why their relationship was romantic because, again, like, everything is so dramatic when you're a teenager. And both Finch and Violet were in like a very sort of precarious emotional place when they meet. And so it made sense to me that that developed like very rapidly, you know, like sort of exponentially. Yeah,
because it's intense. I get it. But
right. It's all very intense. And like, oh, no one else understands. Like a normal teenager feels like no one understands me except, you know, whoever. So someone who's dealing with like these issues and feels like that degree more alone and like excluded or whatever it is, like I get that, the attraction between them, but yeah, I don't know if I would necessarily like change that, but I think it was something I was aware of, especially the second time I read it again. But you know, like I said, I think she almost balances it, you know,
yeah,
not
no,
quite. She almost pulls it off by being like, it's Finch and other things.
Right.
So,
and that was
I
good.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
And I was also going to say that I felt like it was a lot more of Finch just understanding how she felt and sort of pushing her outside of her comfort zone. I mean, I think them, you know, loving each other and being in a relationship helped, but a lot of the ways she changed in the beginning was before they had any sort of like physical intimate relationship. And I liked the way that he was, you know, we were talking about before about the suicide facts and everything. He was so open to talking about what happened to her and her sister and about death, and it sort of just didn't allow her to run away from the situation anymore and allowed her to really talk about it. And I think that helped in a lot of ways. And then on the flip side of that, I kind of liked how, you know, there are a lot of books out there that's like, oh, love conquers all and love will save your life and everything. Well, it didn't say Finch in this case. And I think that was pretty profound of her to do that, because, you know, right up until the end, I was pretty hopeful. And I was like, well, maybe, you know, maybe it'll be all okay. And, you know, I should have known better. But the thing is, that is really realistic. And you, if you know somebody in that sort of situation, you know, love isn't always going to be enough. Sometimes it's just the way that that person is. And sometimes they do things that you can't control no matter how much you love them. And so for her to end the book the way she did, I think, again, very realistic. And obviously that's sort of what happened in her life as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think like just going back to Violet for a second, the damsel in distress trope, which is like what is essentially what is happening here, it doesn't necessarily have to be like romantic. It's just the fact that it's a man like rescuing a woman.
Yeah.
You know? So in that sense, like even their interactions before they start having like a romantic and a sexual relationship would still count towards that. But I understand what you're saying, like, and I totally agree. I should have mentioned that before. Like, you know, what happens with Finch Like that kind of goes to the whole thing, because for Finch, Violet is the only person he has, really. Like, he kind of has his couple friends, but, you know, they like drift in and out, and that's like fine and whatever. But he's sort of manic and obsessive about Violet from the start, you know, whereas she, like, yes, you know, she, well, like, if she says she loves him, like, okay, so she loves him, and that's great and whatever. But again, like, she still has these parents, and she kind of has these people at school, and she has this support. And yes, I think Finch was like instrumental in kind of pulling her out of herself in a way. But that's, again, like, kind of problematic, because that could have been like, you know, a girl at school. Like, it could have been his friend, whose name I now can't remember.
Charlie.
Who, like, the girl.
Brenda,
right. It could have been Brenda, who was, like, from the start, you know, not gonna let her get away with, you know, like, ignoring the accent or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it could have been done in a different way. She chose to do it through Finch. That's fine. It's just, like, something I was aware of. But, yeah, in terms of the ending, I agree. I was, like, in two minds about it, I guess, when I got there. I was thinking, if he is still alive, I will be so mad at this book. You know, if he was still alive at the end, I would be like, don't read this book. I would have been very frustrated with it. But at the same time, I thought, like, oh, well, you know, it's like a YA book that's being compared to John Green. Okay, he's going to be alive. You know what I mean? So I was like, it was obviously very sad, but in a way I was sort of satisfied that she went that way with it, because it was, yeah, like, more confronting. It's more difficult. She could have had him just be waiting there for Violet, you know, like, Violet freaks out and then, oh no, he's sitting there, and oh, it's all happily ever after. So I'm glad she didn't.
Yeah, it was a daring move, because the entire story up until, like, the last 30 pages, you just kind of see him spiral and change, but you don't really, I don't think you ever really feel like he's going to follow through with any of it. And then,
yeah,
like, it happens. You're kind of just a little in shock about it, because Violet's the one that finds him. And I think that's what's even almost more raw about the whole situation, is that she's the one that finds him. And so she's forever going to have that image of Finch in her head. Do you know what I mean? It's very honest, and it's very brutal, and yet it's still really, it's an important way to go in the book, I think, in a lot of ways, because it's very realistic. These things happen. There is no avoiding it. You don't always get your happy ending, no matter how much you love someone. And so for her to kind of see it all the way through was really important to the book.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a tragedy. Like, that's what she's trying to say. And we see that tragedy, like, through Violet's innocence in a way, because she believes, like, you know, she, like, we see from Violet's chapter, she's kind of in two minds as well. She's like, oh God, like, I know where he's gone. But then at the same time, she's like, oh no, like, he can't be gone. And I think for me, the most, like, grabbing image of the whole book was, yeah, when Violet finds him and the description, like, you know, this is going to be slightly graphic, but the description of his body when they pull it out was like, I did not think she was going to go there. And just by doing that, this elevated the book for me, because, like you said, she's really not shying away from any of this. And you do, like, I'm not going to say particularly books, but there are some in every category, but, you know, obviously we talk about YA a lot. So there are a lot of YA books that sort of romanticize depression or suicide as these things that, you know, oh, it's like tragic, but oh, they're in a better place. Or like, you know, oh, you have a bit of depression, then you get over it and like your life's perfect and whatever. Like, that is not a regular experience for someone, you know, like you were saying, Jen, someone like Finch, who very clearly needs some sort of probably medication, at minimum, like intensive therapy, and who has zero support, is not going to be able to say to himself, like, okay, like, it'll get better, it'll be fine. And yeah, like that description of when Violet, like, they pull the body out and she says, like, oh, it's, you know, it doesn't look like him, and all of this, like, it can't be him, doesn't look like you know, thinking how long that body has been like sitting in that water was just like very shocking to me. But yeah, I was I really respected the author for like going that far with it, even though, you know, it might seem like somewhat gratuitous. I feel like she really wanted to make the point that this is not a good thing, you know, like this is not a, and the book is really about the effect of death on the survivors, you know, like we see that through Violet with her sister and then with Finch and his family and all of that. And it just, it hits you really hard, that scene, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the adults in this book, because I wanted to scream and like strangle some of them and have a, like a hissy fit at them, because some of them are absolutely terrible at their job, at being parents. And like, that was the hardest part for me reading this book, I think, was the counselor who's dealing with Finch. I wanted to smack him numerous times because he didn't do his job. Like, he didn't do his job at all. And it was driving me insane. So, and Finch's parents are not great people. Finch does not come from a happy home life in any sense of the word. You know, he's allowed to sleep in his closet and nobody notices that that's what he's doing because they don't check. Because they don't, they're so all individualized in their own places that it doesn't matter. Really, the only kind of redeeming set of adults in this book were Violet's parents. You know, I thought they were doing everything they could as parents, given the circumstances, you know, and they were trying at least. But the other adults, I couldn't even. I don't know how you guys felt about them, but.
Yeah, pretty much the same, I think. I mean, obviously, Finch's father was a disgusting human being, but at the same time, he also had his own mental issues. And so you kind of just wonder, you know, if he had gotten help, maybe he could have been a better father. But I mean, his mom, I mean, I think she had her own issues too, but his mom probably drove me crazy the most, especially at the end when he told Violet, or when she told Violet to go look for Finch, probably knowing that he wasn't alive anymore, and yet she couldn't bring herself to do it. And, you know, I don't want to lay the blame on her as a parent, because that's a really difficult situation to find yourself in. But at the same time, I mean, just like negligent, that's just the word that kept going through my head over and over when it came to her. I mean, not even noticing if your own kid is in their bedroom. How do you even live like that?
Yeah, I would argue that like you might not want to blame the mother, but I think the author does blame the mother in a way, because like she has Violet's parents say, you know, I can't believe she made Violet do that, especially like about going to find the body. And yeah, I would agree with you. Like I personally feel like, well, I can't, you know, really say, well, it's her fault or whatever. That's not, there's a lot more going on than that. But his home life certainly didn't help his mental state at all. And, yeah, you know, it's, of course, like, was that a fair situation for Violet to be in? Like, not at all. But again, like we see her home life is stable and her parents are trying to be supportive, and like all of these things contribute to her being able to get through this. And Finch is like at the opposite end of the spectrum where he literally has nothing, you know, like his parents are split up. His relationship with his father is abysmal at best, you know, abusive certainly, like his mother negligent, I think would definitely categorize that. He has his sister who, you know, like people get consumed with their own lives, like that's what happens. And and I guess also, you know, with Finch, like he's kind of done this before, like he's disappeared and he always comes back, and so they just assume like, oh, he'll just be back and it's fine, and don't realize like that this time is different. Yeah, it was interesting to me that the author was okay with like placing some blame on Finch's mother, but didn't seem to place much blame on the staff at the school or the guidance counselor. I didn't feel that. I don't know if you guys felt differently, but no. I didn't feel like she was really thought, you know, kind of pointed at them and said, well, you didn't really do what you could have done either.
No, I think with the staff at the school, you know, there was the joke about how he had to save up enough money in case Finch did something and there was a lawsuit. But that just bothered me to no end. The guidance counselor is what bothered me the most, or the counselor is what bothered me the most. Yes, the mother had her own set of issues, and the mother was, you know, negligent in a lot of ways. But at the same time, as someone who works with kids, you have to know what your responsibilities are, and he followed through on none of them. When the mother never called him back after the many times he tried to call her, you make a different effort. You show up if you have to. Like, you do something differently because this kid is clearly floundering and you know it. He knew it, and he did nothing to help him, as far as I'm concerned. That's the way when I read it, I was screaming at the book. So
yeah, I guess that's like your, you know, that's the personal experiences that you bring as well. So it's interesting to see, because I was aware of that, but I didn't focus on it so much, I suppose, when I was reading through. I think, like, also in terms of the parents, the scene that really stands out is when, you know, Violet's parents have like banned her from seeing him, and she goes down to see them, and she's like, look, I know I wasn't meant to see him, but he's in trouble, like, he needs help. And her parents are immediately like, okay, and they, you know, try and get like a psychiatrist, and they try and get in touch with Finch's parents and all of this. And you know, I just was like kind of cheering at that moment, I guess. I was like, God, at least like someone is doing something for this kid. Like, you just feel for him, you know, and for her, because like there is only so much you can do as a teenager. Like, I don't wanna be dismissive of the value of like teen friendships and relationships and stuff, but like sometimes you need an adult. Like, sometimes you need someone who has more life experience. That's just how life works, you know. And you kind of get the sense that like Violet has really reached the end of her, what she can do for Finch, in a way, you know. Like, she's not, it's not that she's stopped trying, but like you reach a point where you can't do anymore. And that also showed her growth, I guess, that she felt like, even with the situation with her and her parents, like she felt like she could go and say to them, look, this kid needs help. He needs your help. And like, I can't do this by myself anymore.
Did you guys like Violet's parents? Did you think that they did everything they could the right way? Or did they annoy you guys at all?
Yeah. I don't think anyone in this book did everything the right way. Like, I think everyone was very flawed in maybe a slightly exaggerated manner, you know. But I guess I don't know, maybe it was just like the comparison between what they were doing versus like what Finch's parents were doing, that I was like, oh, at least they're doing something, you know. I don't know, like, was there something in particular that you found frustrating about them?
Well, just the part that you brought up with how they banned Violet from seeing Finch. And it's like, from their point of view, I get it. But at the same time, they're kind of falling into that same sort of stigma that like, oh, this kid's kind of weird. Like, we don't want our daughter around him. And rather than figuring out what this situation is exactly, and maybe a way that they can help, like prior to Violet going to them being like, look, things are really bad, let's do something now. I would have liked to have seen them do something beforehand. But at the same time, like, obviously that sort of furthers the plot along. And yeah, nobody's perfect, and I think that's a good example of good parents making some wrong decisions. But they kind of annoyed me. I don't know.
Well, yeah, and I guess also, like, I understood that their priority was really just trying to make sure that Violet was okay, and they've already lost one daughter, and maybe that manifests in being, like, overprotective. Right. Like, that makes sense to me as a kind of result of that, and I agree with you, it's not necessarily the right thing, but, you know, they're so, at that point, they're so consumed with, like, making sure that, I mean, you have to remember, like, this is a girl, she hasn't been in a car for what, like over 6 months. She's wearing her sister's glasses, her sister's clothes. Like, you know, I hadn't really thought about it until this moment, but like, imagine how hard that must be for a parent to have lost a kid then you have your other child clearly floundering at the same time, like sort of trying to be the daughter that you lost, you know, like constantly reminding you, I don't know. I think their priority at that moment was not anyone except Violet. And that's not necessarily a good thing, but well, it's not a good thing, but it is understandable in a way. But yeah, like you said, not perfect, but I suppose I could relate to them more than to Finch's parents. So I was like more understanding of them, which is not fair necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so just as a little side note, because I think, do you guys have anything else you want to say about the book in particular before we move on?
I actually did wanted...
you want to talk about Amanda?
Yeah, was that her name? I couldn't remember.
Yeah,
yes. Amanda. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. This part actually is one of my favorite parts out of the book because it just goes to show you that a character or even just a person in real life that you don't always know where they're coming from and you don't always know their story. And Amanda was not a nice person and she did a lot of things wrong and she was very mean to Finch and she sort of, you know, her friends and her little clique were mean to them too, and I think she was a big part of that. And yet, come to find out near the end of the book that she has an eating disorder and she's going to the same class that Finch went to. And it's just like, wow, you know, I had to sort of stop and be like, I was judging her for everything she was doing, not knowing her backstory, not knowing maybe why she was so mean to people. And now that I understand, it's like, you know, it doesn't make what she did right at all, but it was, you know, pretty eye-opening for me, and I didn't see it coming either.
Yeah, me either. I liked that it was, you know, a small inclusion, but it just goes towards the author's point of like, you know, everyone is complex and you don't necessarily know what's going on just from like someone's Facebook statuses or having a conversation with them in the halls at school or any of these things. And I appreciated Amanda more at the end where she risked her own secret, I suppose, like her own privacy to tell Violet that she was concerned about Finch, you know? Yeah. And I think, like you said, it doesn't excuse what she has done. It doesn't excuse her behavior, but it just shows another facet of her personality that she was sort of observant enough, I suppose, to realize like, he was really in trouble and he needed help from like anywhere and that maybe Violet didn't know that. And you know, I also liked that Finch went to that group. Like I thought that was an interesting choice to show like he was kind of trying to reach out in a way, but you know, maybe too little too late.
Yes, indeed. Okay. So, do you guys have anything else about the book in particular?
No. It's like, I didn't know I had this much to say about it.
So I know. Yeah. You're like, oh, man. It just kind of comes pouring out once you finally get to talk about it.
Well, it's so interesting. Yeah.
It is really interesting. Just as a side note, for those of you who have read the book and are interested, Derm Magazine actually exists. Jennifer Nevin actually writes for, like, created it and writes for it. So if you guys want to check that out, you can go to her website and you can find it there. There's also magazine entries for Eleanor and Violet. So there are she has both of those magazines, which are talked about in the book. They both exist in real life, so you can kind of check those out, which I thought was kind of interesting and fun. And Marima, I know you've been dying to tell your story about the Post-it notes.
I just wanted to explain it because I've like talked about it 500 times, but I didn't want to spoil the book. So like we talked about last time how, you know, people do like various publicity things and sometimes you get a book with like some kind of, I don't know, prop, I guess, to accompany it to be like, you know, get your attention. And when I got my copy of All the Bright Places, it was covered in Post-it notes from that scene when they're in his cupboard at that point and they're writing down all the things that make them happy, like on the Post-it notes, you know, and sticking them up so that he has like something like positive or whatever. And And so, like, all through this book are post-it notes that the publicity team at Penguin, who published this in Australia, like, wrote out, which I just thought was, like, such a cute little thing. So let me see if I can find a couple. So I got daisies. That's a thing that makes someone happy. Pancakes. Let It Go, which I'm not sure that that makes me happy, the song Let It Go. I'm not 100% sure if I put that on my...
They clearly don't know you.
I'm not sure if I'd put that on my wall, but yeah. And they're like all through it. And so you'd be like reading, and then you'd be like, oh, like another post-it note. And I just like the idea that that someone, like, you know, it was someone's job to like sit there and write down all these like happy, cheerful things on post-it notes and stick them in books. But also, it was very confusing to me before I had read the book, because the cover of the arc is quite simple, and it has like a small blurb on the back with, again, more post-it notes. And so I was like, is this book about post-it notes? Like, is the story told in post-it notes? Or like, do they communicate with post-it notes? I was so confused before I started reading it. And there were like all these post-it notes like in the book before I got to that scene, and I was like, guys, someone needs to explain this to me. Like, am I missing the metaphor of this book, or like, what is this about? I don't understand. And then I finally got to that scene and I was like, oh, it all makes sense now. But it was good, because it was annoying me, so I had to read it to like find out, what do these mean? Like, someone explain this to me. So yeah, there we go. There's some good press.
Very nice, very nice. All right, so I don't know if everyone knows this, but All the Right Places has actually been optioned for film, and it's already has a star assigned to it, and that's Elle Fanning. So how do you guys feel about that now that you've read the book and you know that Elle Fanning is going to play Violet?
I can see it.
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to check.
I just kind of worry about, like, how... I guess how much they're going to stick to the story that's in the book, because that ending, man, that ending's tough. And I don't know if they would try to sugarcoat it or not. And I kind of hope that they wouldn't, just because I think that it should
ruin it.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, it's hard, but it's true. You know, right. It's, I think, necessary.
Right. I think when you option a book like this, you have to go in knowing that you can't really play with it. Do you know what I mean? Like, when you option a book, I mean, you can a little bit, but you can't like, the idea of buying a book this impactful isn't to change it and make it sweet and sappy and happy. Like, that shouldn't be your intent. And if it is, then why don't you just write a script that fits that rather than buy a book option?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, that should be your intent. But, you know, I think we've seen enough books, like, go through adaptations where they really lose the point of what the book is about. Or, you know, things just become a little softer and a little nicer and a little easier to deal with. Like, not that you lose the story, but, you know, like, maybe you don't see Finch's body, or, like, maybe... whatever, Violet is like, oh, he's at the end. All you need to ruin this book is to have someone at the end go like, oh, he's in a better place and like whatever, and that's it. You've totally destroyed the entire, you know, like, it would be so easy for them to mess this up. It was interesting that they optioned it before it was even published, so, you know, that like created a lot of hype for it. But yeah, I share Karen's concerns, and like, for whatever they talk about, like, even if the author is like helps write the screenplay or is an executive producer or whatever, like, I would argue The Fault in Our Stars. I'm not like the biggest fan of The Fault in Our Stars, but I found the book a lot more impactful than the film, because I did feel like it was sort of glossed, just like, you know, made a little shinier and a little nicer, and they lost some of the scenes in the book that make you think like, oh, cancer sucks, you know. Like, in the film it's like, oh, romance is nice, oh, and also there's cancer. So I feel like it could very easily go a similar way, where it becomes like more of a romance and less like a sort of exploration of mental health and all of these various issues that we've talked about today. But in terms of the casting, I think Elle Fanning is very good. I could definitely see her in the role. I will be interested to see who they get for Finch.
Yeah, because, man, Finch is going to be – it's an intense role. So they have to get someone who could pull it off in order. I mean, I think it really, a lot of it will hinge on his performance as Finch.
Yeah,
so
I would agree.
Should be interesting.
Maybe they'll get like a kind of unknown.
Yeah, that would be, I would be down with that.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about some of the feedback we've gotten on Twitter. First, we have Laura J., who says, I really liked it. Pleasantly surprised. Watched an interview with the author discussing how events from her life influenced the book. Very interesting. We'll be intrigued to see how the movie does with Elle Fanning as Violet. As will we, Laura. The next one is from Caroline, and she says, I'm starting tomorrow, so hopefully I'll be finished for a listen at the end of the week. Well, I hope you like it, Caroline, because we did. All right, and then we have some feedback from our publicity conversation that we had last episode, and Karen, I'm going to let you read this one.
Woo, because, okay. You know. Yes. This is from Stephanie, and she says, I totally agree with Karen, and I love when authors know how to use hashtag social media. Definitely keeps me loyal as a fan. Thanks! Not everybody ever agrees with me, so I really appreciate that.
We agreed with you on that topic.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
So,
we
come
all
on.
Have the same annoyances.
Yes, we
last time.
Did. All right. And then the last one, Marima, you want to read this one? Because this is about a comment you had. Kind.
Yeah, this is from Lolita, who left a comment on our last episode on Hyperball, who said, okay, let's forget better blurbs. Can we actually have blurbs on the back of books? I can walk into Dimmicks any day, which is a bookstore in Australia. I don't know if you have that. And find plenty of books without a blurb, just generic two-line reviews splattered on the back cover. I'll tolerate one review from another author, but can we just find out what this book is going to be about? I totally agree with that. I guess it's not something I think about that much because often like the covers that we get of books are different from the ones that are in stores, and also because like most books that I get have a press release with them that has the blurb on it, so I forget like, yeah, they, why don't they do that anymore? What happened to blurbs? I know there are like statistics and stuff that show that blurbs like don't help like don't increase sales or anything, but I mean, surely people want to know what a book is about. I don't understand
right.
People who buy books without knowing what...
I'm like...
You know what? Yeah. Like, my mom... Okay, I'm going to complain for a second. My mom buys all these books without knowing what they're about, and I find it so frustrating. Like, I don't know why. She just goes like, oh, I heard it was good, or oh, I like liked this author, or oh, I was nominated for this prize. I'm like, mom, what is this book about? She's like, I don't know. Like, I'll find out when I read it.
Oh.
I just find it so frustrating. Like, how do you like prioritize what you want to read if you don't know what any of them are about? Like,
yeah.
Oh, I don't understand that.
Yeah. Well, I hate when you go into a book and you're like, oh, this cover looks really cool. And you flip it over and you're like, if I have to buy this book based on what the cover looks like, I'm not doing it. Like that's just me. But I agree that
yeah.
A blurb on the back would be super helpful.
I put the book down if there's no blurb on the back. Cause I'm like, I don't know what I'm getting into.
Exactly. Yeah, me too. I just don't like the extra step of having to like look inside the front flap and be like, is it just inside the cover? Like sometimes they put it inside the cover.
Right, right.
But like, just put it on the, I don't know, just put it on the back. How hard is that? I don't think it's going to ruin the like aesthetic integrity of your book cover to like have a blurb on the back.
And that's like the whole point of the back of the
book. Yeah, that's what it's for.
Oh boy. Anyway.
Yeah, good comment, Lolita. We totally agree.
Yeah, clearly we're with you on that one. All right, so as a reminder, our February book for our book reading that you can join us with will be The Red Queen by Victoria Evyard. It's a very cool fantasy book, so I think you guys will like it. And then for March, Karen will be picking our book, so feel free to harass her with any suggestions you may have. Unless you've come up with one already, Karen.
Definitely not.
So feel free to harass away.
I'm going to harass Karen on Twitter with book suggestions.
Oh, I love it. All right, so until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Marima.
Bye, guys.
Bye.